Hey everyone, welcome to Monika's Love Line, and today we have an amazing guest. He is a legend, actor, singer, multi-platinum recording artist, songwriter, and guitarist, David Cassidy.
Hello, Monika, and everybody out there. I am very, very grateful to speak to you.
So on Monika's Love Line, fans write in some love advice that they want heard from me and the celeb guest. So I'm going to go on the Monika app, and Kelly just said...
Let's do that.
Yes. Kelly just said on the Monika app, she commented and said, "My parents don't like my boyfriend. What advice do you have?" What do you think?
Well, that's such a general question.
Yeah.
How can anybody
it's like,
answer
why
that?
Don't they like
oh,
them?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is he a serial killer?
I'm guessing not.
You know what I mean? I mean, how
right.
can you comment on that?
Yeah.
You must evaluate your choices in boyfriends or girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if they walk around with a hatchet on their belt, you might want to reconsider that.
Definitely.
So, I there's no way to answer that. Keep
right.
going.
Okay, let me see. I got another one on the Monika app. Willie says, "My coworker has a major crush on me, and it's making things awkward since I don't feel the same way. What should I do?"
Be honest.
Be honest. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Be kind and be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know. Was this Willie as a guy or a girl?
He is a guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're assuming it's a guy. But the mm-hmm. answer is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Unless she's a psychopath, which,
right.
by the way, I have met many
oh,
in
no.
my lifetime. No, I have. And,
yeah.
and sadly, I have.
Mm-hmm.
But they are out there, male or female.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would just say is, listen, I think you're a great or maybe you don't think she's great. But listen, I'd love to work with you. You know,
mm-hmm.
I want to have a decent relationship with you. Who knows? Maybe we can be friends. But as far as romantically, I'm not into that with you. And
yeah.
it's a painful pill for that person to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's insane, you're going to be stalked, and you're going to have to go. I know this.
Yes.
Hopefully, she's not.
Right.
Yeah. You know that balance that you won't have to cope with that.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I have had to cope with that. So
oh no.
That's why I give him the end.
Yeah.
Hey, this is David Cassidy. I hope you take time to just check out my new Christmas album on iTunes. It's the best thing I've done in many, many years. Hey, this is David Cassidy. And guess what? You're listening to Monika's newest song.
Sarah was deployed before her birthday. She was 20 years old. Little Tony heard a knock and ran to his front door. There stood two men in uniform. Just 2 weeks till Mike was a father, but he never made it home, and he never saw his baby girl.
They're risking their lives to keep all of us safe. They're so selflessly brave. We're praying for their safety. They fight for the day when we can put guns away, and they're all home to stay. We're praying for your safety. Service, your honor for the service you've done.
Thank you. Dave's wife got a call and flew to hospital. She prayed it wasn't too late. Jamal's dad took the folded flag and cried. His only son laid to rest. Lexi ran to the crowd that was cheering and hugged her brother with tears of joy that he was home. Risking their lives to keep all of us safe. They're so selflessly brave. We're praying for their safety. They fight for the day when we can put guns away. And they're all home to stay. We're praying for your safety. And thank you for your service. You're honored for the service you've done. We thank you, thank you, thank you. We love you, love you, love you. Thank you for your service. You're honored for the service you've done. Oh, yeah. We're praying for their safety. They fight for the day when we can put guns away. And they're all home to stay. We're praying for your safety. And thank you for your service. You're honored for the service you've done.
It is such an honor to have you on my show, Monika's Loveline. You are one of the world's biggest icons, and you first rose to megastardom in the 70s with your starring role in The Partridge Family and your mega multi-platinum hits. Were you expecting The Partridge Family to just take off like crazy and become the number one TV show?
No.
No.
In all honesty, no. What many people don't know about me is that... I began, let me give you my life story since we have time.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit abbreviated. I grew up, I was born in Manhattan in New York and moved when I was about 4 or 5 to right outside when my mom and dad got divorced to New Jersey, to West Orange, New Jersey. And I spent my early days there till I was 11 and then moved out right before 1962 to L.A. because my mother was an actress and she'd been on Broadway many times.
Mm-hmm.
And my father and Shirley Jones, who he had married, lived out there. And my mom wanted me to be closer to him and also for her and her career as an actress and as a performer. It worked out. So we moved out there. And anyway, by the time I was 17, after going through rock and roll, 60s, Southern California, like, he started to play guitar, Beatles, all the rest of it, B.B. King, Eric Clapton, I saw Hendrix 4 times, and I became very focused. And my last year in high school, I started working with the Los Angeles Theater Company. And because I had done a lot of other drama stuff and worked in drama in high school, etc., I was the first non-professional they ever accepted.
Wow.
So it was really amazing. I was I was working with really fantastic, credible actors. They weren't stars, but very credible actors. You know, they were doing Twilight Zone and, you
awesome.
Know, really great, like really cool actors.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am, I'm a senior in high school. And yeah, you can imagine what a thrill it was for me.
Yeah.
So, 2 weeks after I graduated, I promised my mom and dad when I old. We lived in Manhattan. I'm going to backtrack a little bit just to give you an understanding. When I was 3.5 or 4 years old, my dad was starring in a show on Broadway called Wish You Were Here. And it was quite a big hit. And my father sang the theme song. Well, the title song, not theme song. We didn't have that live in those days. So I remember taking a taxi, and my mom's on one side, I'm sitting in the middle, and my dad's on the other side. And it's 1954 or something like that. Like, you know, it's basically caveman dark ages compared to where we are now. We're doing a podcast.
Right.
The only kind of cast was the kind that they would wrap around your ankle when you got...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I was very, very fascinated with my father because he would play music all the time around the house, records, recording stuff. And I remember I must have been 3.5, 4 years old, something like that. And he brought home this machine that had tape and a microphone. And Lord, if I could have ever thought I could have saved that tape, because I was like 4 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. We're in the cab on the way to the theater to see my mom and, sorry, to see my father, and I'm going to sit with my mom in a matinee on a Saturday. And I remember the excitement I had that morning and that afternoon. And we go in to the theater, the curtain goes up, and my father comes out, and according to my mother, of course I don't remember this, I screamed out, "That's my daddy!"
Aww.
Well, yeah, so sweet. I mean, I can't relate to it because I certainly don't remember it. But I remember the feeling I had when we got into the taxi on the way back to our apartment in Manhattan. I was almost like shaking, trembling. And I said to both my mom and my dad, one on the left, my dad was on the left, my mom was on the right. And I remember saying to them, "That's what I want to do, Dad. That's what I want to do, Mom. That's what I want to do." And my father became a big Broadway star, but they both said to me, almost in stereo at the same time, "Listen to this naivete. You can do it, but not until you graduate from high school." Like, that was going to get me somewhere. I had something to fall back on. And honestly, because no one in my family on either side had ever gone to college, none, or university, none. They were all artists, or artists in a way. On my mom's side, a lot of carpenters, but all musicians, all of them. And on my dad's side, the same. You know, my dad's side was Irish Catholic. My mom's side was very religious, very Protestant. And I was kind of split down the middle. Genetically, probably more Irish, but only Irish, actually. But I knew at that moment when they said to me, "You can do this, but not until you graduate high school." And you know what? It planted this something in my brain so that I never had any anxiety about what I was going to do in my life.
That's great.
All through, like, you can, I'm sure, remember when you were in, what do they call it, middle school now. We call it junior high in those days. But you remember, or in grammar school even, you know, one K through six, people would say, so what do you think you're going to do in your life? And I, you know, a lot of people said, oh, gee, I don't really know what I want to do. Okay. I always knew what I wanted to do, and I knew how I was going to do it.
Yeah. And that's awesome.
I really did. Mm-hmm. From that moment on, when I was 3.5, 4 years old.
Wow.
Which is, it's pretty remarkable when I think back about it. Mm-hmm. Not just because it's me, but, you know, I have a son, and all my friends, and we talk about it a lot. And we, you know, as parents now, we're a little different than our parents, but I think it's really quite unusual for someone at 3 to 4 years old to know exactly what they wanted to do and how they were going to do it.
Definitely.
I mean, I think that's quite unique.
And you did it right. You got right out there and did like a number one TV show, multi-platinum, selling out arenas.
Yeah, but you're jumping way ahead.
Right.
And you're right. I did that.
Yeah. So that's crazy.
No,
you knew all along what you wanted to do. That's great.
It is. Mm-hmm. The fascinating part about it was, for me, I mean, and I've heard from people like, wow, can you believe from the time you were 4 years old, you saw your dad, you said, that's what I'm going to do. And your parents said, you can't do it until then, until you graduate from high school. 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, I flew back to New York. I took a part-time job in a mailroom at a textile company and got myself an agent and started going in the afternoons after my morning job in the mailroom was over. Mm-hmm. I would go on auditions.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
As an actor or a singer or musicals or commercials. And I might have done, I keep saying 200, but I'm sure it wasn't that much. It was probably 100, but it felt like 200 before anyone said yes, right?
Mm-hmm,
you keep getting no, 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 no. And then finally, I did this audition. I'll never forget this day because it changed my life dramatically.
Yeah.
It was at the Winter Garden Theater in Manhattan on 7th Avenue. And the show was a musical. And they cast me as an actor, really. I mean, the music part was very little. But I got my first professional job on Broadway as an actor in a flop musical called The Fig Leaves Are Falling. And the more I say it and think about it, how incredibly lame it is.
Oh.
No, it is. Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating. It's fascinating to look back on it for
Definitely.
Me because it changed my life in a big way. I'm 18 years old and I'm now supporting myself on my own. My mother didn't have any money. And my dad said, go ahead, I did it. You can support yourself. I didn't take any money from either one of them. And I'm thinking about it now as a guy who has his own children and, you know, I've been doing it for now 48 years. How, I don't know who that guy was. I'm lost in a way, like, that was so brave. That was so bold.
Definitely.
And I am in amazement about it. Not like, there's no conceit or arrogance about it. It's truly astonishment, like, wow, how different our brains are when we're innocent teenagers. And I know the world is way, 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 way different. But promised them I would do when I was 4 years old.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And uh-huh. Then what's even crazier is I'm doing this Broadway show, and we do what's called previews on Broadway.
Okay.
And we had already been out of town. We had played a bunch of shows, and they change things, and they cut things, and they add things. We were in Philadelphia for like 6 weeks, and then we got back to New York, and I moved in with one of the girls that was in the chorus, and she had already been established. She's a wonderful singer and a beautiful person. Her name was Anna, and she had a place on 49th between 8th and 9th, and I shared her rent for a month, I think it was, or maybe 2 months, something like that. And we started previews, and for some reason, I don't know why, it was just fate. A casting director, talent, if you don't know what a casting director, they cast movies and TV, from CBS Films came and saw the show that I was in, and then came backstage after the show and said, I'm casting a movie that I think you'd be great for in Los Angeles, where I spent my teenage years, and I'd love for you to do a screen test. And in those days, they shot film screen tests. And I said, well, I can't do that. I'm committed to doing this show. And he said, okay, since you're in previews, if something happens and the show closes or anything else, here's my car. Please give me a call and we'll fly you back out here and we'll do the screen test. And I said, great, that'd be wonderful, but I doubt it. Anyway, 5 days later, my show closed. And on the sixth day, I made a phone call.
Yeah. Crazy.
And, by the way, my show didn't quite survive. So if you'd like me to come, and he said, absolutely, I'll work it out. I'll get you a flight, and we'll schedule a screen test for you. So it was weird, but I did the screen test. And this is really deep. I don't know that I've ever spoken about this. Maybe once or twice in my life. The film was called, I'll never forget this, Hail Hero. And it was about an 18-year-old, which I was, but I looked like 14, apparently, in most people's minds. I was told this. And the actor who got the role from the screen test for the movie was an actor named M.K. Douglas. And that's a fact. Later changed the name to Michael Douglas and became a friend of mine. I was at one of his wedding ceremonies as his friend, and I've seen him numerous times and laughed about it. And I said, man, you know, at 18, I was so, you know, I was so hoping I could get him. He said, thank your lucky stars you didn't. And anyway, I don't know that I've ever told anybody that story. Anyway, I digress once again. So I do this screen test, and they're quite frank with me. They say, you know, you really don't look old enough to do this college guy. You look like you're a teenager and not like you're in junior high school or middle school, something like that. So the casting director was so great. Man, I owe that guy so much. He showed it around to other casting directors and said, I think this kid is going to be a big star. He told me this. He said, I sent it to them.
Wow.
And from that, I got an audition without an agent. And awesome. Then from the audition, I was cast in the role, I don't know the name of the role, but Bonanza? In Bonanza? Ironsides and Marcus Welby and the Mod Squad. I did all these lead roles in these dramatic hour shows.
Yeah.
From him doing that. And I had to go in an audition, of course. And from that, I got an agent. And one thing led to another after, you know, there were seasons, as there still are. I had done like 8, 9, 10, something like that, kind of leads in the hour television shows that were on the FBI. I mean, all kinds of like hour TV, which if we looked at them now, it'd be so lame. I'm sure. But I love the fact I can say, I actually starred in Bonanza. You know, I loved that.
Yeah.
And I got to work with such an amazing human being and a great actor, Dan Bacher. You know, he played Hoss. Anyway, you know, you have to be alive in another century. But it was a fantastic opportunity for me to do all that work and be able to go out and... My best friend from high school and I moved out together in Laurel Canyon, got a place together, and we split the rent. And I was able to continue to split the rent even though I didn't have a steady job because I was working enough. And then there came pilot season, which basically everybody on the planet knows what that is, but back in the day. Other than people in L.A. or from acting or television or film, did not know what that was. And I went and I auditioned as an actor, not as a singer or guitar player in any way or songwriter. And I went through like 6 or 7 auditions and I did a screen test. And I remember in those days we did a screen test with actual film. They don't do that anymore. They call it a test now. But in those days they did actually a screen test up until I think like the late 70s they kept doing that, or somewhere in that area where they would actually film it. And I remember there was a guitar there that I think Mike Nesmith, who could really play, by the way, from the Monkees a couple of years before, maybe 2 or 3 years before, in the 60s, there was a Stratocaster there. So as a child of the 60s, I consider myself. In the beginning of the scene, I didn't sing in it, but there was an amp and a Stratocaster. And before they said action, they were rolling now. And I started playing the beginning of Voodoo Child, Slight Return. And I had no idea what this family's song sound would be like, nor did they. But I mean, they didn't cast me as a singer or a songwriter, or a guitar player for that matter. They cast me as an actor. And that I was.
Yeah.
And I eventually got the role from the screen test. And then, because Columbia Pictures Screen Gems Television had recently bought a record company called Bell Records, they were obviously obligated to record and do the recording for the television show, which has music in it every week. So they hire a very pop songwriter producer, Wes Farrell, and the record company is Bell Records, and I have to go in as the star of the music part. After I told my agent, I said, just tell them I can actually play and sing. And I mean, it seems ludicrous now. I know. It seems ridiculous. But in those days, the network executives were literally like in their 60s. And I'm like 19, 20. And they had no connection with the culture. And I promise you, these are network executives that had been around since the 50s. And they had no interest. Listen, we could do anything we want to do. You'll do whatever we want. Right, got it. So anyway, they hire this record producer, and I have to go in and audition. His name is Wes Farrell, and he'd written some really good songs, like Hang On Sloopy from the McCoys, Come a Little Bit Closer. And if you look those old singles up in the late 60s, like 66, 7, 8, 9, he'd written some really great hooks. And I went in, I put up my guitar, and I had to sing for him. And I sang a Neil Diamond song. I don't know. I think it was. I've forgotten, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I auditioned for him. You see me driving up, and I'm at his, like, at the studio, and I'm walking around with my guitar case, walking in, going, hello, I'm David Cassidy. Yeah. So, sit down. So, you sing? Yeah, I sing. Uh-huh. And I play guitar. Uh-huh, good. Well, you got something I could hear? Yeah, sure. So I sing this Neil Diamond song.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't really say much. He said, okay, well, you sound pretty good, I gotta say, kid. And it was kid, always kid.
Hmm.
And I was, to be honest, I was 19 at the time. I hadn't even turned 20. It was probably March, just before my 20th birthday. So the next day, they called me and said, Wes Farrell loved your voice, loved the sound, loved the way you looked, and the fact that you can play guitar is great, but you're not going to be playing live with the band. He's got his own rhythm section, but you can sing live with the band. So there became the beginning of my fantastic and wonderful journey.
Yeah.
Starting with all the Partridge Family hits and getting nominated for Grammys. And,
yeah, crazy.
You know, I learned how to be a professional because I was a bad garage blues player.
Mm.
When I was a teenager in the 60s, and I know I've gone into an awful lot of detail, and maybe I've gone too far. I don't know. You can tell me.
Oh.
Seriously, please tell me. I don't know.
Oh. No, I think it's great. People can hear, like, how, you know, everything, how, what really happened, how you really, like, blossomed into your career.
No, this
so
is
it's
how
great.
It happened.
Yeah.
So I've never recorded my voice, and meaning I'd never been in a recording studio, and I didn't have any recording devices when I was 19 years old, because I'd been acting. I wasn't even thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
This just happened. So I got cast as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care if I could sing or I could play or anything else, but I was blessed to have been sent to the center of the honeysuckle, where the greatest recording, they call them the most hits ever played as a drummer. They called them the Wrecking Crew in L.A., much like the boys in the pit in Detroit with Motown. But these guys played every genre.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And the writers I got to work with, and the musicians. I can't even describe this, the background singers and everything. What I learned in 4 years plus more, there is no amount of money that you could pay for that education.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't.
Definitely.
I worked all day on the set. I went in almost every night for months at a time,
mm-hmm.
and sang live with the band. And, you know, I would come in if I had to fix something after we recorded the tracks. But we recorded hundreds of tracks.
Yeah.
Literally.
Wow.
You know, we would do three in a night.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the leader and the drummer was Hal Blaine, who had recorded more hits, significant hits, top 10 hits, than any other drummer in history.
Mm-hmm.
Try Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on and on and on, but that's all you need to know.
Yeah,
you know,
crazy.
Every Beach Boy hit,
uh-huh.
he played drums and arranged with Brian. And I got to write with Brian Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to play with John Lennon. I got to play with Paul McCartney. From all of that, I got to, because I picked up a guitar when I was 13 years old, thanks to my dear stepdad, who paid for one after I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. And it changed my life in so many ways, so many great ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I am here before you and all who will listen to say, I really mean this. I have what I consider, because I continue to record the way I always did, hundreds and hundreds of tracks,
mm-hmm.
Live with a band and playing with a band.
Yeah.
My latest EP, which is on iTunes and David Cassidy Music and DavidCassidy.com, and it's out this week. So I'm feeling as I never did a Christmas album, a solo Christmas album.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So when is your new holiday Christmas album, is it out now, and where can fans listen to it and buy it?
Yep. Hopefully you will. If you don't, I'm really proud of it, because I have such a great band and they all played with me on it, and we played live together, but we also recorded this together.
Yeah. So it's on iTunes right now?
Yeah, it is. It just went up a couple of days ago. So
awesome. We're going to play
iTunes or David Cassidy Music or DavidCassidy.com.
Cool. We're going to play some of those songs on the show so you guys can get a sneak peek, and then you guys got to go download the full album on iTunes.
Yep.
So it's so crazy. You have sold like 30 million records, 24 platinum and gold records, multi-platinums. Like, how are you able to like constantly reinvent yourself with your music with selling so many hits?
You know, I think the answer is, and you will attest to this as an artist, the only thing that survives, as my father once told me, the only thing is talent.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the goods, you're going to go through, if you're lucky enough to be really successful, you're not going to stay there. Sinatra didn't, Elvis didn't, I didn't. But if you can have the goods and have the heart and the soul and the determination and have the fire burn inside you to show the world you could do something else.
Yeah.
And that's what 48 years gets you. And he said to me, and I'll never forget it because I idolized it. He was such an incredible artist, such an incredible talent, my dad. Said to me, you've got it. I have it.
Awesome.
But you've got it, and now you've got the fame.
Yeah.
He said, don't blow it. Use it and never give up, because the one commodity that will always, always be in fashion is talent.
Definitely.
And that's it, man. I mean, in the end, that's all there is. I don't care what genre you're talking about.
Definitely.
Whether we're talking about, you know, banging nails.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people that are committed and who are talented. You know, if you're doing construction or you're, use your imagination, anything.
Right.
If you're committed and you have the talent and you have the desire and the drive, particularly in something that's creative.
Yes.
It's the difference between hot and cold.
Definitely.
Night and Day, written by Cole Porter.
Uh-huh. So.